people could cement their legacies in you know, this city if they have success. If they, you know, people, Kyle Dubas was on his way. A lot of people like him, including us. You know, he was on his way to cementing his legacy here, and he pivoted. They pivoted away from him. But, you know, here's a scenario for Brad Treliving to come in and continued, you know, it's like you said, an organization that has depth as far as the front office. It's got a lot of good pieces in place, and he needs to continue that on and put his stamp on this team.
Sure.
That's what he needs to do.
And yes, he's worked in a Canadian market, but as you know, Noodles, living in both places, Toronto's a different beast than Calgary.
100%.
It's
the size of the market, the passion. You know, Toronto, and Brian Burke can speak to it too, is, you know, Toronto's such a big animal. Calgary, you know, it's been more of a oil and gas, white-collar city. Mm-hmm. A lot of transient people come from other cities that move to Calgary. That's what I experienced when I first moved there. You know, I've had a couple tours of duty in Calgary and grew up, obviously, in Alberta. But, you know, Brian Burke can speak to both markets and how passionate they are.
Sure.
Just the size is different.
Well, let's bring him in here. He's the former GM of the Leafs and former president of hockey operations out there in Calgary, joining us here on the Maple Toyota Hotline, back on Overdrive. Here's Brian Burke. Thanks for doing this, Brian. We appreciate it. And obviously, you know, you're aware of this. It's coming up a lot with Treliving coming aboard. You know, he learned in Calgary, and he can apply it to Toronto. You know it better than anyone. You worked in both spots. How would you compare and contrast the two markets?
Well, I loved working and living in Calgary. Like Noodle said, it's a great place to live. People are wonderful. It was my favorite place to work in the NHL. And it's a passionate hockey market. They're knowledgeable. They love the game. They're dyed-to-the-wool Flames fans. Difference of scale, like Noodle just said. You're talking on a typical day on a Tuesday, if we didn't play a game, we would have maybe 20 reporters cover the, you know, three cameras and 15 beat and column guys doing stories. So it'd be a small group, couple of cameras. Toronto on a non-game day, it's 80 and seven cameras. So, and on a game, like Hockey Night in Canada game on a Saturday night, it's over 100. And that's why, I don't think people realize, that's why dressing rooms are that big. They're for the media. Like, we don't need half that room in these buildings. And then on a typical day where you practice or play, you don't need any space. You'd really rather that the benches were closer together so guys could make eye contact and speak. My favorite rink in Europe is in Cologne, where at the practice rink, their practice rink is on rollers. So they practice and they make eye contact like we all did as kids. You're looking 10 feet away at a guy across from you taping your shin pads and talking about the game. And then after the game, they move the rollers back about 15 feet so there's room for the media. But that's the difference, would be the scale.
Berkey, with Tree coming in, what do you think's imperative for a general manager coming into a new scene? Is it like a statement, a PR move, or just what he does with the hockey team as far as what his vision is and putting that into play as far as player personnel?
Well, it's a little bit of both, though. I think, you know, there is a PR side to this, and some people are better at it than I was, obviously, but I think if you can do something, you know, sign an unrestricted free agent and get some popularity points that way. One of the guys is well-liked. There's probably something you could do quickly to curry some favor that's in your best interest, not to do it just for the PR, but generate some good PR out of it at the same time. That's probably a cheap, easy way to start. But then you've got major decisions, and I think you have to prioritize them, but I think they're pretty simple to prioritize.
In which way? Like what if you're looking at this job, what are the priorities?
Auston Matthews right away. Matthews, the coach can wait. Sheldon Keith's a good coach. He's done a good job. Maybe he comes back, maybe he doesn't, but you can certainly say to them, I got to wait, Sheldon, you got to wait till after the draft. I got a lot of other stuff to do. Figure out Auston Matthews, figure out Nylander going on a no trade, figure out a limited no trade, figure all that out. You got to wait a little bit, but it's an unfortunate part of the business, but he would have to be a viable candidate to survive this anyway.
Right. Well, and you know, you talk about messaging and PR. I'm curious, you know, where you stand on that in this market. When I consider, you know, the way you approached it, you were always accessible. You were always doing media, TV, radio, you know, newspaper, whatever it was. And with Dubas, with Kyle, by the end of his run, he didn't do any of that. He really was never made available. I don't know if that was his choice or the team's choice. If Tree Living called you up and asked for your advice on how he should go about, you know, being available, messaging, you know, what kind of advice would you give to him?
Well, I would disagree a lot about what you just said, Kevin, in terms of my accessibility, because I'm really happy to hear you say that, that people think I was accessible. I actually cut back my access dramatically after my first few weeks there and let the coach talk. So to me, the problem with Toronto is if the GM's talking all the time, the coach is talking all the time, people are confused. The players even are looking at, well, who are we listening to here? Listen to the coach or listen to the GM? So I cut way back. I think you're right. Early on, I did. And I, on major stuff, I was always successful. That's, I think, a big difference in Toronto. There's a big trade or someone gets sent down or something major happens, that's where you have to be accessible. And that's where I think I would step in a crisis and deal with whatever needed to be dealt with. But I wanted the coach to speak for the team more than me and the players.
Berkey, we've been talking about it a lot, and you've been in a lot of different organizations now throughout your career, and you've been afforded a lot of different resources. So, you know, one thing that was pointed out is, you know, Tree Living comes to, you know, Toronto MLSE. It's a big corporation. Do you feel like the more resources you have, the better it is for a manager, or sometimes it might be overkill? You know, Calgary's different than you've been in Pittsburgh. You've been in Toronto. You've been in Anaheim, Vancouver. You know, every organization is built differently, but it seems like Toronto just has so many people in that front office. Is that an advantage or sometimes a disadvantage where you've got a lot of people that are pulling on you?
I never wanted the biggest staff. I just wanted the best staff. There's a huge difference. And in my mind, you can overkill, hire too many analytics people, hire 3 or 7 goaltending and consultants, and you can staff up and say, look at the staff we have, look at the expertise we've added. The fact of the matter is, at the end of the day, when we get to make a trade, I'm going to turn to 2 guys in that room, the assistant GM and the chief scout, and say, all right, what do you guys think? So in my mind, I remember my first board meeting with teachers when I came. I remember one of the board members said to me at the end, what else do you need? And I'd never had anyone ask me that in an owner's meeting before. So what else do you need? I said, what do you mean? I thought he was talking about me. Do I need help getting the house or, you know, what do I need? I said, what do you mean? He said, well, what else do you need? What else can we spend money on? And I burst out laughing. I said, I've never had an owner ask me that before. But that was the mentality. And yes, it's nice. You can address, like the Marlies, they travel with 2 buses, right? Get this, though. You know what it's like, right? The Noodles, you guys played way back when briefly in the minors, if I'm not mistaken.
One game, Brian.
I was longer, though, Berkey.
two buses. So guess what? You have a little more room. It's nice. You have 2 buses. You think anyone else in pro hockey has 2 buses? No. So, yeah, it's a nice luxury. I would have said, there's no way we're doing 2 buses. Those guys can get into the bus with each other and sit next to people like they're supposed to and get to know your teammates and enjoy it. So I think it's too much. Can you add too many people? Can it get too loud and too many decision makers in the room? Absolutely. And I was very cognizant of that. But I think it's a nice thing if you think, well, would be nice if we add Joe Smith. You can add Joe Smith and no one says, where's the budget on that? Where's the approval on that?
With Brian Burke. So how do you think you marry, like, the idea of making sure these players feel like, you know, they're comfortable, that they're treated well, that they have all the resources, but also make sure it's not like a coddling environment? Is that possibly what happens around the Leafs at times?
When I was in Anaheim, just to give you a convoluted answer, when I was in Anaheim, I think one player had a car deal. Maybe 2. Probably Tamu and Scotty Niedermeyer had a deal where they got a car from the dealership and they had to do a couple of appearances. In Toronto, every player's got a car deal, every single one. So I can tell you in Anaheim, Francois Beauchemin, who was a marvelous player for me, he never had a car deal. So it's all with us. You get coddled. Like, you want to buy a stereo, you work for the Leafs, they got a stereo guy. They got a guy who will come and set up the stereo and give you a 30% discount. They got a suit guy. They got a furniture guy. So they have a guy. You get coddled from the day you get there.
I don't know if that's coddling, Berkey. I think that's just, hey. I mean, I'm a broadcaster now, but if somebody says, hey, I got a furniture guy, he's going to give you a free couch, I'm taking a free couch.
Yeah, and my point is not, you take whatever you want. My point is, this is expected and handed to you in Toronto, where it's not a lot of other places. It's just not. It's a different scale. It's a different, and it's not all bad, like you say, oh, but it's not all good either. If everyone, guy loses 10 games in a row and he still got a free Porsche, and he's saying, what the hell? I'd like to get rid of this guy.
Yeah,
so
Kevin,
to me, there's a balance.
Yeah, Kevin never got that Sarnia, I'll tell you that.
Don't start with me. With Brian Burke. So in terms of Shanahan's role in this, because you played the role of Shanahan before he did when it comes to Trey Living, Brian, because you hired, you know, Trey Living back in your Calgary days. And, you know, there's a lot of rumors, reports about what Shanahan wants, what he wants to do with the players, what he wants to do with the coach. Who knows if it's vetted and it's true or not. But if you're Trey Living, or put yourself in those shoes, if you go into an interview with Shanahan and you have an understanding of what you think he wants, do you pitch him on that? Do you counter him? Like, how do you go about that process knowing that Shanahan is still at the top? And, you know, if he's going to get what he wants, he's going to get what he wants.
Well, understand how that has to work in my view is, I remember when I got hired by the Calgary Flames, I said to Ken King, the late, great Ken King, how's this supposed to work? Who's in charge? Am I in charge or is Tree? And he said, just imagine your business partners. He said, you're not going to walk in one day and tell your business partner, I'm trading so-and-so, or I'm taking a month off, or I just sold a warehouse. You're never going to do that. You're going to run it by your partner and get consent or some type of consensus. And then at the end of the day, the odd time you have to pull a trigger because you told him gently, I don't think this is a good idea, and you have to put your foot down at the end of it. That's a disaster if it comes to that. You've got to finesse that so it doesn't happen. It doesn't come down to where you're saying, no, I'm not approving this. Now, did I put my foot down just a couple times and usually gently, usually let Tree have his way? But you get the message after four meetings where I said, I really think this is dumb. He would drop it.
Right.
I think that's how you do it, without a showdown. And Shanny's got to have the last say. The president of hockey operations has to have final say. And you're going to come to that day someday where he says no. But that's a disaster. Once that happens, it's like a government failing, right?
Yeah, that's I wanted to ask you about, you know, the strengths of Tree. You just mentioned the working relationship. You know, what can we expect for him coming to this market? And, you know, we all know he's affable, he's good in the media, but, you know, what would you say maybe one or two things that were are strengths of him as a manager?
Well, I think you got to go back to watching him as a player. When I met him, he was playing in the East Coast, or playing in the Western Hockey League. And we played a preseason game, and he fought Gino Ogic. Now, you say to yourself, how'd that go? It didn't go very well, but he fought him because he was trying to make his mark in training camp. Now, that's a guy, he had good PIMS everywhere he played. He was a well-traveled guy in the Western League and played in the coast. This is a guy who had to work for everything he had. This guy comes from a ton of dough, the Boston Pizza family, right?
Mm-hmm.
But he never acted like he came from a lot of dough, and they never treated like he came from a lot of dough. He was raised the right way. He was raised to earn what you had, be polite, listen, say thank you, and play hard and do everything you do hard. Started working in management when he worked in Columbus, selling tickets. Working in the off-season, selling tickets. How many guys do that? So he's worked at everything he's done. He worked at that new league they put together years ago. Worked in when he went to Phoenix. He ran the league. They were in bankruptcy proceedings, so they had to go to Bill Daly for everything. He's just an impressive guy. So I think he's got budgeting strengths. I think he's got a clear picture of how to build a winning team. He's a good guy, like you mentioned. That goes a long way. He can get people to trust him and listen to him. I think it's a great hire. I really do.
We're chatting with Brian Burke. You mentioned a few moments ago, you know, top of the priority list is Matthews. And his, you know, he's not a free agent this year, but he will be a year from July 1, and he can officially sign an extension as of July 1. I'm curious how, you know, he gets to the player, or if even that is a possibility, Brian. Like, does he just deal with the agent, or is the new GM, can he not call up Austin directly and chat with him about where he stands? And, like, how does that process possibly work out here?
Well, the first trip I made in Anaheim, was the day that Scott Niedermeyer became a free agent, I flew to Cranbrook. And I flew to Vancouver and then took that small Dash 8 up to Canadian Air back then, I think, to Cranbrook and met with Scott Niedermeyer. And said, Scott, what do you need? What are you looking for here? And he said, I want to play with my brother. I want to play in the Western Conference. I'm sick of the Eastern Conference, and I want a chance to win. I said, well, there's only one guy that he's going to talk to you that can check all his boxes because I'm the only guy that can keep Robbie Niedermeyer here. And so I said, you got to deal with me. If that's your list, you got to deal with me. So if I were Tree, and I bet you he's already figured out, he's on a plane in the next day or so. Get through your media stuff in Toronto. It's a big burden the first couple of days. Everyone wants an interview. Get through that and then get on an airplane and go sit down with Austin Matthews. Don't talk shop. Just talk hockey, personality, family. Talk about everything but business and then go and meet with the agent.
Yeah. And I mean, that's such a big part of the process, obviously. And you know, how do you see Matthews approaching this, Brian, based on, you know, the negotiation in the past, how much he's already making? You know, is there middle ground here where he's going to get a raise, he's going to get a lot of money, but where the Leafs can possibly get a win out of this too?
I have no idea. Like, you're asking me, I don't know Austin Matthews hardly at all. I said hi to him a couple times. I have no idea what makes him tick or what he wants after this. I know he has said, at least in the media, he has said he'd like to stay. So that's a good starting point. I know he loves playing here in terms of how he's treated. And the reverence that the fans have for him in Toronto, I think that's a good starting point. Sit down with him and say, all right, if you want to stay, then we got to talk about an extension. What would it take? And see if there's middle ground there.
Yeah. I mean, that's going to be a big part of the next month and a half. What about leading up to the draft? You know, they don't have a lot of picks. You know, how important is it to be on the same page with your scouting department? Does he have enough time, Trey Living, to bring in his own people? You know, or is it just such a quick turnaround where he's going to have to let the dust settle, you know, into the summer and maybe bring people in he wants to bring in?
You can, when I used to run the draft with Toronto, Vancouver, whatever, I would call a GM I trusted. So we would have our list, our scouts. I loved our scouts. I trust them completely. But I'd always say, I'll tell you my top five. You tell me your top five in no order. Go alphabetical. I'm not going to tell you who's my number one guy, but I'll tell you my top five are to get some sense that I had the list right. At least one of the GMs shared my view on the list. The list we were talking about was right. Tree's got contacts with enough guys. He can do that. They've got great scouts in Toronto. They'll be able to help him without that. But if he wants to double-check things, it's easy to do. I always did it.
Well, we're still going into the Cup Final here. We got to wait until Saturday night, Brian, but you got Florida, you got Vegas. One team's going to win the first cup, you know, in their franchise's history. How do you see this one playing out? Who do you like going into a cup final?
Well, I think I'm going to give you a lawyer's answer, which is really means I'm going to wimp out and qualify everything. I would take Vegas. I think they're the better team. I think they're a deeper team. I think they're more weapons. And I think they've had a better year. They're playing an eighth seed that barely got in. If we had crapped the bed in Pittsburgh, they probably wouldn't have got in. So here's the two factors that change that equation where you'd say, okay, I'm taking Vegas. Well, Bobrovsky's been the best goalie on the planet for about 4 weeks, 5 weeks. Best goalie on the planet. Best goalie in the last couple of years, probably. So that changes the equation a little bit. You go, hey, not so fast, Bob. And then Matthew Tkachuk is single-handedly laying armies to waste by himself. Like, this guy's a one-man wrecking crew. So you got to temper their abilities. They're dominated more by a handful of players than Vegas is, but they got a warrior factor going and some belief going right now. So it's going to be tough. But if I had to pick, gun to my head, Vegas.
Yeah, well, we'll find out starting Saturday night. We always appreciate you finding time for us, Brian. We appreciate it, and we'll do it again down the road. Thank you for this.
Okay. Thanks, guys. See you all. See you in the
Wolf. Yeah, there's Brian. Brian Park.